In 1776, it is believed by one and all that Paul Revere, on horseback, went yelling through the streets of Boston, "Here comes the British, here comes the British." But in fact, another story, a true story, never revealed because of its foolishness, that Paul Revere was first to have yelled, "Here comes the Colonel, here comes the Colonel."
These ridiculous comedians who sneak in here. First of all, it wasn't 1776, it was 1775, and he didn't run through the streets of Boston, he ran through Concord and Lexington. And I wasn't there! All right, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. We're going to get right back to our interview in just a minute with father and daughter team, Pete Forster and Andrea Forster, and they're talking about prostitution. We have to get it over from being a social conversation to one of science, so that's what we're going to work for as soon as we step over here to our fountain of useless information for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of youth. Information. How can I help
you? Ah, yes, we've thrown in the coins, and so, yes, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Okay. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. This is an easy one for you. Oh, spirit of the fountain. The Celebes Sea. I'll even spell that for you. Celebes, C-E-L-E-B-E-S-C, is bounded by the Philippines to the north and which country to the south? Oh, spirit of the fountain, that should be an easy one. For anybody who knows anything about geography, the Celebes Sea, bounded by the Philippines to the north, but what country to the south?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
The spirit of the fountain cannot be fooled, certainly not when it comes to a geographical question. The Celebes Sea, bounded by the Philippines to the north? And if you said bounded on the south by Australia, you're wrong. It's bounded on the south by Indonesia. Yes, Indonesia kind of sneaks in there just a little bit with the curvature of the earth. Okay, the Celebes Sea, bounded on the north by the Philippines and the south by Indonesia. Okay, back to our program.
For example, in Philadelphia this August, we will have the Democratic National Convention, right?
Okay.
And events like that bring in large numbers of sex workers are trafficked into the state.
But Philadelphia, that's the city of brotherly love. Don't you expect a lot of in the sex trade in the city of brotherly and sisterly love? Well, okay. All kidding aside, what you're talking about really, those who would like to legalize prostitution with the willing are worried about the human trafficking of the unwilling. That's really the crux of the problem, I think, isn't it?
So there is that residual population, yes, the streetwalkers, but also then there's kind of a rise to demand for special events.
Oh.
People often think of the Super Bowl as one of those.
Yeah, but then I'm curious as to, you know, how you would put a stop to this sort of thing, because it's historically been going on, and this is a science program, so sometime or other we're going to have to get off the social issue and get around to the science of it. How do you characterize these sex traffickers?
Right, so actually what our work is focusing on is the online world of this sex trafficking.
Oh.
And were you... Go ahead.
No, I just expressed a surprise. Go ahead, please.
So what we're actually looking at is a site called Backpage.com. If you're unfamiliar, it's like a Craigslist where people put up classified ads, and they sell anything from old boats and cars to actual women being sold as traffickers. And so what we're looking to do is determine whether there's a way to characterize these ads and determine for ourselves whether these are actually human trafficking rings or whether it's prostitution.
Well, okay, so we're drawing a distinction then between human trafficking rings and prostitution. What we're presuming then, what I'm presuming then, and correct me please, is that prostitution would be a willingness on the part of the female participant, and trafficking rings would be the enslavement of girls from overseas or from poor neighborhoods or from other places like that. Is that the distinction?
Yeah, the real distinction around trafficking versus prostitution and where it is, where it would be prosecuted, is in the sense of coercion. Is the individual who's involved being coerced somehow? And I want to clarify a couple things in this. One is that it's not just girls. There are males involved also in these rings. But the coercion side is really what defines trafficking as opposed to simply prostitution. Now, having said that, some of the estimates that we've seen in the literature is upwards to about 88% of what I would call sex workers are being trafficked. There's a sense of coercion in what they're doing. So it's a fairly large percentage of that population.
So we're not as interested in looking at the prostitution per se. We're interested in looking at the coercion, the enslavement of these women and men, you say sometimes. And that's where the real problem comes in the focus of law enforcement. Is that right?
That is correct, because obviously the coercion is very hard to prove. And it's hard. It requires training both of law enforcement. It requires an approach that looks beyond the individual prostitute, if you will, for lack of a better term, and begins to look at what is the network that's behind this individual. And that becomes very difficult for law enforcement, one, to prove and to prosecute, primarily because it's just hard to collect evidence on what's going on in that environment.
Okay, so then now you're focusing then on the internet to trap people who are trafficking, using coercion for men and women in the business of prostitution, or let's say the sex trade. Where does this get to be a scientific study of characterizing the sex trafficking in Pennsylvania?
Well, where it becomes a scientific study. So what we do in our project is we actually download the ads from Backpage. We take them off the live servers. And once we collect these ads, then what we begin to do is look for commonalities among them. Commonalities might be things such as the same phone number across a series of ads. It might be a similar type of prostitute. It might be a similar location. It might even be similar wording in the ad, how the ad is actually written. And what we can begin to do then is, using this kind of metadata — we do not, by the way, download the we don't download the pictures that go with Backpage. We only download the text. But then what we can begin to do is perform some analytics on what that text is saying, where do we see these phone numbers, where do we see the locations, and in that way we can begin to build out a network. And then the human side, so the computer can do that for us. Then the human side comes in, and now we begin to analyze these similarities and say, what is this showing us, and how do we now begin to identify networks or patterns from this data.
Okay, so you collect the data and you build profiles, and that is how you can identify a possible problem, and you turn that over to law enforcement, and then I presume sometime you do a handoff to law enforcement. So I'd like to know when you do that handoff, and then are you out of it, or does law enforcement then go ahead and move in and start making dates with these people and move undercover?
Well, right. They do. That would be the ultimate goal of what we do. We do pass it on to law enforcement. What law enforcement's really interested in is maybe not so much the data that we come up with, but the process we use to get that data, which may be different and is different from what their analysts can do. First of all, their analysts don't have time to step back and do the kind of in-depth research of the data that we're doing. They just they're like most intelligence folks, they're driven by activity, right? Response to events. So that's one of the reasons they came to us, is what they ideally what they'd like to find is, what is the process that you use? How then can we adapt that process to be used by law enforcement to improve our situational awareness of the sex trafficking within the area?
Okay. Now, you're going to be making this presentation at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in May, May 10, 11, and 12, actually, in Boston, Massachusetts. And the title of your presentation is that, Characterizing Sex Trafficking in Pennsylvania for Law Enforcement. So you got very specific. And you've given us a kind of a preview of what we might expect, but really not. What is it that you are going to present? Maybe we should get concise. You know, how are you going to present this? And then what's going to be the takeaway? What do you want people to come away with?
Well, what we want people to understand, there are a couple things. We want to understand. Do you want to answer this, Andrea?
Sure. So one of the big things we're working on right now is pushing out an awareness campaign, because, like many things, people are unaware that this is going on. It's really just recently come to national attention that this is such a problem here in the United States. So one of our big things is the awareness aspect. We want people to understand that this is happening and that there is something we can do about it, but we have to be proactive to do it. The other thing is, we want to show people how we're helping do it. We'll give examples of different sort of networks we've found and how we determined that those were human trafficking and what we can do about them.
Right, and so also what we'll talk about is the process that we've used to identify those. So the takeaway is multifaceted. As Andrea said, one is simply an awareness building. I think you're familiar with the fact that Secretary Johnson has made human trafficking a major issue for DHS. So the awareness side is very big. We're in touch actually with the Blue Campaign out of the Department of Homeland Security, which has a national charge of growing awareness. But the second part then is the process that we've used to sift through the large amount of information that's out there and to be able to distill from that information real networks, hierarchies, and those are the kinds of things we'll be talking about also when we do the presentation.
Yeah, of course, that leads me to the question. I mean, awareness is one thing, because awareness is something we can do here in this program, and that's something that we will do because we're widely listened to all over the world. So this is an awareness thing that we can get out this way. But awareness is not going to be such a big thing at the conference, because you're only going to be talking to maybe 300, 500 people that attend the conference, and they're scientists, and they're going to be interested in the how-to and how you do it. And so you're going to reveal some of your methods and how you do these profiles?
Yes, we are.
Okay. All right. The quick answer. All right, good. Well, I would have to say, since we've talked so much about social issues here, I mean, I'd kind of like to get your personal opinion. You know, in the old days, houses of prostitution, as they are in Nevada and in Mexico and in other places of the world, are licensed. Medical doctors watch the people that participate. There doesn't seem to be the kind of sex trafficking problem that we find where prostitution is legal. Wouldn't it mitigate a lot of these problems if some of these areas where the roughnecks were coming and needed some romance and release that there should be maybe prostitution legalized?
I wouldn't certainly go that far. I think the problem is, and I don't know a lot about Nevada. We've not done a lot of research in Nevada, but the problem is that I go back to that 88% number of people being coerced. So that even if you might legalize the act itself, the individuals who are involved in this are probably not the majority are not doing this as a part of their own free will. And hence, I don't think just even legalization would make a difference in that. There's too much money involved.
Well, what's suggested is that the professionals would do it because they want to do it, because they get paid to do it, because they're good at what they do. And that if the professionals take over and do it, that there won't be a market then for those who are being coerced into it. And it's almost like the drug industry. I mean, you've got illegal drugs, and so therefore we have an incredible industry in illegal drugs. But if drugs were legalized, the thought is that it's like prohibition was back in the 1920s. When something is prohibited and when it's illegal, people want to seek it out and want to partake of it. And when it's legalized and regulated by the authorities, then the problem goes away.
I think that's partially correct. However, there's always going to be the aspect of somebody's going to want that act cheaper, they're going to want it quicker, and they're going to want it without so many rules, maybe. And so, yes, we see it with drugs, we saw it with alcohol, but at the same time, you still have the thing like the Silk Road, or the sort of undercover, underground industries that are doing the same thing for cheaper illegally. And I think we're going to see the same problem with prostitution if it was to become legal.
Yeah, I can understand the Silk Road is a horn thing and why we want to fight it. But I have a confession to make. My very first job before I got into radio, I was a bootlegger. Before you laugh too loud, let me explain. I was a bootlegger at age 16. And the reason I was a bootlegger at age 16 is because I had a source for beer and alcohol, and none of my friends could drink. None of my high school buddies could drink. So every time we had a graduation party, or we had a baccalaureate party, or we would have a skip day or something else, I was always me that supplied the booze. And I had a 1954 Ford with a false trunk, and I would load it up with cases of beer and liquor and those sorts of things for my sources. And I made a pretty good living from the time I was 16 till I was 18 and went off to college in North Carolina. So, when liquor is illegal, of course, there's these industries that pop up. And I've seen it with the drug industry, and I suspect that that's probably one of the problems with the prostitution industry. So that's why I had to ask.
Not a problem. And I would give you an example, though, of cigarettes, which is something else we work on here, is illegal cigarette trade.
Sure.
And even though cigarette sales are legal in Pennsylvania, there's still an underground trade in cigarettes, an illicit trade in cigarettes, because it's profitable for people to do it. So I think you're right on target.
Because of the taxing, you can buy cigarettes for nothing in North Carolina, which is cigarette country, and you're not far across the border to get into Pennsylvania, where the taxes are heavy, and so yeah, there's an incentive there to do that.
Yep, absolutely. So,
okay, good. Well, I was hoping that maybe you and your daughter Andrea would maybe put on the thinking cap for a minute and kind of look down the future for us, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I mean, is this problem going to be solved, or do you see other things that are going to come around? And in your studies at science and technology at Penn State University, give us a look into the future. Do you have something to tell us? Maybe start with Pete and then Andrea.
Well, to be honest with you, as disappointing as it is, I don't think we'll ever solve the problem. But our hope would be to at least contribute to a mitigation of the problem. And I think as awareness grows, as new approaches such as the one that we're working on are refined, I think we will be in a better situation to combat this situation, to combat the sex trafficking area.
Yeah, and I would agree. As I mentioned earlier, it's really been in recent years that this has really taken ground and people have really begun to notice that it's an issue here. And I think that now that that's happening, now that DHS has looked at it, they started their blue campaign. Different law enforcement around the country is beginning to see this problem, and as it becomes more well known, more people become aware of the problem. We can only hope that there's going to be a solution. And he's not wrong; it's probably never going to go away. But if we could just make it if we can make it less of a problem, then we're doing something.
All right. Pete and Andrea Forster, at Pennsylvania State University, the College of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State. What have we missed? What did I hesitate to ask? What, is there a point or something that you want to get out that I haven't touched on?
No, I think we made all of our points, and we're looking forward to presenting the research we've undertaken and a robust discussion around it.
Okay, one more thing before we go. Just out of curiosity of my own sake, I know, Pete, that you mentor your students, and you've probably been mentored yourself during your life, and I know that you've mentored Andrea, and Andrea is probably in the process of mentoring, too. How about both of you putting on your caps here just a minute? Got a creed to live by, words to live by, maybe a few short suggestions about a word of wisdom or something? Maybe Pete first?
I guess I would say is don't ignore a problem just because you think it's too hard to find solutions to. So stretch yourself and challenge yourself.
And I would say no matter who you are, even if you're just a student at a university, you always have the power to do something about a problem you see.
Okay. Pete and Andrea Forster, father and daughter combination from the College of Information Sciences and Technology at Penn State University. You both have been absolutely incredibly enjoyable. It's fun sometimes to deviate from real raw science into social science, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say on characterizing sex trafficking in Pennsylvania for law enforcement at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on May 10, 11, and 12 at the Westin Hotel in Boston, Massachusetts. We'll see you there. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime. Webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Today, from where I started in, Fortran, COBOL, my earlier development languages when I was in college, right, Fortran, COBOL, and BASIC, what I see today is we have a tremendous amount of technology helping people do their jobs. And it's really, so we have technology replacing where it was manually done before. Now what I see in the future are how we're going to handle technology controlling aspects that it never used to control. So then there's going to be, in my opinion, my forward thought is, organizations, companies, and people standing up maybe industries to help deal with that. So I'm not 100% sure where we're going to be 20 years from now, but I can tell you it's going to be fun. Philip Bardasian, technical sales specialist with IBM, part of the IBM Continuous Engineering for the Internet of Things.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow. I am waiting for you.